from the heart of Europe to the world. Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones. R-T-I.
So we are back, our lovely listeners. And as I promised, we're going to talk to Lee about his not long done marriage to his lovely lady, Andrea.
Yeah.
And I want to ask if you had, before marriage, this prenuptial agreement. Have you done it?
Well, no, because basically I'd had everything offered by then, so it was all right. I didn't need one.
Okay, and what do you think about it?
What do I feel about prenuptial agreements?
Yeah.
I think, really, and this is going to sound outrageous, and I don't mean to be outrageous, and if people bear with me, I think they'll understand where I'm coming from. But if you're going to hate me at the beginning of this, that's fine by me. We've all been through broken relationships and broken marriages, and women want equality. So why do men have to give everything that they possess and everything that they earn to the woman who they made a mistake with in the first place?
And that I think they only have to give half, to be fair.
Oh, no, I'll tell you, Rachel. Now, it depends entirely what the courts decide in Britain. There is no percentage matter in Britain. You can actually end up virtually giving. I've known men who have been good jobs, earning good money, and because they've been caught by the CSA, because they've been taken through the courts over the divorce, they've literally lost everything. At one point, when I was in the process of getting divorced, I was working on a daily newspaper, I was earning good money, and the judge who was presiding over our case left me with £60 a week to live on. That was what the judge decided I needed to live on. The rest of
Christ.
The money, yeah, I had to give. I think it was at that time, because it's a long time ago. I think I had to give three times that much on a weekly basis to my ex-wife, and that is why, unfortunately, prenuptials have had to be brought in to protect not only men, women as well. You've got to be fair against being ripped off, stitched up, and have their lives destroyed by the tragedy of divorce. It sounds completely unromantic. Nobody should have to go through it. But unfortunately, the way this ridiculous world is, we need to have these things, male and female, to protect what is ours.
I agree with you, and I think you should take away from the marriage what you brought into it. Any assets that are accumulated during the marriage equally by income or otherwise should be split equally. And anything that you walked into the marriage with, you should walk out with.
Well, yeah, I agree, but that it doesn't always work that way because quite rightly, you've got to take children into consideration in this, and
sure.
Normally the children stay with the mother, and so really, yeah, I 100% agree. The father should be responsible for helping with the bills about child. But again, here's a real equation. This is not a false equation. This is a real equation. The CSA in Britain say that it costs round about £120 a week to feed, clothe and house a child. And those figures might be slightly out of date now, but the equation is right.
Mm-hmm.
120 quid a week to look after a kid. And that is basically what maintenance is based on. Based on the fact that that's how much it takes to look after a child, therefore that's how much you have to aim to pay. And it's done on gradations. But listen to this, Rachel.
Oh, yes, please.
The simple fact is that if you, normally as the man, have a child living with you in your house, do you know how much you are allowed to keep that child?
Mm-mm.
£20 a week. The man who has a child at home is allowed £20 a week to look after that child.
And you know why?
The child who is living away, £120 a week. Explain that to me.
Because men can't cook, and it costs more if you are cooking.
You know, it's funny because my daughter lives with her father. And prior to that, she for the last 4 years, and prior to that, she was living with me from when she was 4 years old. Now, he's never worked. He's always been on benefits. And because benefits isn't very much, it's 18% of his income, and I would get $18.20 a week to look after her.
Really? Well, there you have it. That, and that's almost what the British government says, that if you have a child living at home, you can live on. But if you've got a child away, then, you know, it's 10 times as much as that. It is absolutely despicable. It's
wrong. I had to work two jobs to be able to pay rent and feed and clothe and school her.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. And, you know, there are always personal circumstances which if you bring into these conversations, then it can become very hairy. But the principle of it is that if you get married, and this is the real tragedy of the world today, that if you have a romance and it ends in marriage, and that marriage then progresses towards divorce, then both of you can lose virtually everything. And unfortunately for men, I know it's a bit of a man's week because we're doing a girl's show, but the men are thought still to be, are treated like the hunter-gatherers, the ones who can go out and forage for themselves and survive in a dingy bedsit and drive around. See, when I got divorced, I actually ended up where I couldn't actually go to work because my car at that time needed so much work on it that I couldn't go to work, so I had to pack my job because I wasn't left with enough money to pay for repairs on my car. And if you think how stupid that is, that's these things operate, and that's why we have prenuptials. And don't hate me because of...
I mean, divorce
is not... I think a prenup
is
okay.
Yeah, divorce
really
is not a nice thing, is it?
No,
emotionally
it's not,
and everything.
It's very difficult. Emotionally, it's hard enough. And then you start squabbling about money, it makes it even worse. And then if you've got children, it's even worse. But I don't think, and people say, oh, I don't believe in prenups because you're basically saying that your marriage is going to fail. I don't think that's true. I think you're just being pragmatic and pretty sensible.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've got assets to protect, in the event, and everybody hopes to go into marriage that it's not going to fail, but let's say in the event that we don't end up together forever, we need to protect ourselves and each other from anything that may arise.
Well, that's right, and I realise and see the point that, you know, very often, although not so much now, yet it's still operated, that women do appear to be accepted as the people who stay at home and look after the children, become housewives and don't get jobs. Mm-hmm. That's wrong. Nowadays, women generally work. We need to income into houses.
Me always too. Worked when I had a job. Always. I couldn't stay home and do nothing. It'd drive me barmy. But the other thing too is that you're quite right. I couldn't – I mean, I was married to a man who didn't work, so that didn't really help. So somebody had to work, so it was me. But even with Rob and myself, and even though Beth doesn't live with us, we need two incomes to run our household. We have to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the way of the world, isn't it? And I'll be over in 10 days to experience your way of
lovely,
life.
Lovely Perth. Yes, you will.
Yeah, it's the Perth of a nation. What?
talking about Andrea at the beginning.
Andrea? Yeah. I like the way you say it. I'm going to change her name.
I do too. Andrea. That's nice.
Okay, in Slovakia it's Andrea.
Andrea. Like that.
Okay. She loves you so much. Would she pay your ticket for example, for parking?
Would she pay my parking ticket?
Yeah, if you get a ticket from the policeman for wrong parking.
Yeah, she would. Of course she would, yeah.
Okay.
Rob paid mine.
And who
would she pay it if you were dead?
Would she pay if I was dead? No, she'd been an idiot because they couldn't jail me for it. They couldn't whip me for it if I was dead. I'll tell you what, she would actually. She would pay it and I'd come back to haunt her until I'd remonstrated from the dark beyond about paying me parking ticket when I'm dead. Why can't I talk, Rachel?
So I wonder who would pay a parking ticket for the woman who was dead in car.
This was crazy.
What a link that is.
This is crazy. There was a woman, she lay dead in her car, but it didn't stop the parking wardens giving the car tickets. Scores of people walked past this snow-covered car with numerous parking tickets in the windscreen before police found the body of a young mother inside. Get this, she had been missing for 11 days when she was discovered inside the sedan near Philadelphia's main train station on Thursday. She was found lying on the front seat under a pile of clothes and a gym bag, and a post-mortem discovered no visible sign of injury. They reckon they're waiting on toxicology results. But she kept getting tickets for her car being parked. And these policemen for 11 days who were giving her citations on this vehicle didn't realise that the poor woman was in there and dead.
Well, the thing is, if he'd been missing for 11 days, surely there was a missing persons alert and they should have noticed it. This actually happens, not a lot, but it happens in Britain on a number of occasions where people, I don't know, I'm very chagrined about the world at the moment, as you know, like 14 hours to take my car out of my drive. There is a sort of myopia in the Jobsworth type of person who gives parking tickets away, like parking wardens, who would never, ever do anything beyond their duty. It's more than me Jobsworth. That's what we say in Britain. It's more than me Jobsworth. And it's a ridiculous thing, because if you are looking at giving somebody a parking ticket, it is beholden on you to look at the tax disc on a car. And if you're looking at a tax disc, you're looking through the windscreen. So why don't you see a woman who's died?
But it gets better, and you're going to love this because it involves towing. The car was first ticketed on February 10th after it was towed on Valentine's Day.
Because it was blocking
snow removal. So it was towed with this woman in it and still ticketed.
And the excuses, I can't believe this story. I think it's an amazing story, tragically amazing story, yeah. That they say it was hard to see her in the fully reclined passenger seat because of the heavily tinted windows and the snow-covered windshield. Well, the first thing I think, if you're walking down the street, and I don't know if you look in people's cars, I don't look in people's cars, but if you see a seat that's de-reclined, that's been reclined, it tends to draw your attention. So why didn't you see the dead woman lay on top of it?
Exactly. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's one of those whole, how embarrassing moments for the city of Philadelphia. Because, I mean, you know, what about brotherly love? Come on, guys. Notice when people have passed away in vehicles, really. And don't ticket them. Don't ticket them for being dead and not being able to move their car. Good, that's a bit rough. Yeah.
It's worse than that, because it shows this lack of interest we have in other people. You know, it's quite feasible, I'm sure.
No. I have to disagree, because we have another story where it shows that people pay interest, because there's a story about a British woman giving birth on the New York street.
Yes, but that's something you're going to notice. You're going to notice woman's water breaking and placenta coming out all over the snowy street. You're going to notice that, and there's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, and that's going to draw attention.
Yeah,
The lady who was dead was very, very quiet. She didn't scream at all. She was very dead. But this one would have been absolutely screaming blue murder.
But the result of that scream is just nice pinky.
It's
bundle.
A wonderful thing. They're now, but it's fantastic. It was. I love these stories where people give birth in weird places and it all gets, you know, it all ends happily. I love that. I think it's great. We had a story on news
last night, and they were saying that they're actually looking for the lady who helped.
Right.
Oh, just to say thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know if they found her or not, but they're actually looking for her.
Well, we had a pregnant friend of Rob's who her water broke, and they thought, and she got a contraction and was like, oh, we better go to the hospital. She got out of bed, she got to the floor, baby was out. That fast. Wow. He had to He had to deliver the baby. It was what? Like that baby wanted to come out real
that,
quick.
That'd be like playing rugby in somebody's pasty, wouldn't it?
It really was. He was like, I'm ready. I'm ready. Go along. But good on him for, you know, not panicking. And he was panicking, but he wasn't showing her that he was panicking. And good on him for you know, rising to the occasion. But I love those stories about
weird births. Well, she'd risen to the occasion before, actually.
Well, yeah, that's probably how she got in that situation.
Rachel, you cheapened that remark. That was a remark of romance and generosity. You just made it cheap sitting there in your underpants.
I went blue. Sorry, guys. I do that when I'm tired.
Okay, so Lee, do you want to go for the another story?
I want to just ask a question.
No.
This is my only chance to ask this.
This is my show and Rachel's show, and you listen and you go to next story.
I'm curious about the question, though, Petra. I'm curious.
Just talk about amongst yourselves about me. Right, I want to ask, and this is not cheeky, this is not rude, this is not... I just want to know why Americans and Australians, as far as I'm aware, call their downstairs apparatus cover-ups underpants, where in Britain, women call them charming, little witty things like panties, G-strings.
Well, in America, they call them panties and G-strings. Here we call them G-strings, knickers, undies, thongs.
Knickers.
Knickers, yep.
That's the rude word. You can't say knickers on the show.
Why not?
Because it's rude. Knickers.
Knickers.
Yeah, exactly.
I wear knickers. So anyway, there is no reason. So you do. So you say under things.
We call them also, Americans are the ones who use panties more than we do. but we call them underpants. We call them, G-strings. We call them thongs. We call them knickers. Knickers.
We call them gachiki.
We call them undies. We call them, them lots of things.
Do you have big ones and little ones?
Granny panties.
You have granny panties.
Yeah, they're for washing day. They're for when all your really nice panties are dirty and you got to wear your granny panties.
Don't say dirty panties. You're just destroying this show. So I'm digging you, big knickers.
You dad.
Big knickers are for when you've...
No, how big are they?
Oh, well, you know, they start at your, just under your... No, chest. I can't say that. they start under your chest area and they go all the way
up to your knees.
Okay, stop it, you two.
They're like bloomers.
Stop it.
We eat bloomers in England. We have cheese and lettuce on them. We do. Petra, can you save the show, please?
No.
We're so tired.
This can't be saved. I'm giving up.
You should go.
All right, what should we talk about then, Rachel?
You're going to talk about...
Well, let's talk about no knickers. There was a brand of underpants here called No Knickers, and the girl used to say, I'm wearing no knickers, of course. And it was like, oh, that's rude. But actually, they were really comfortable.
I can imagine the sparkle in men's eyes saying, I'm wearing no knickers.
it was a great ad campaign. You can probably actually find it on YouTube. And the idea was that they felt like you were wearing no underpants at all, which in actual fact you were. But they were actually very comfortable. And this sprightly sort of nubile, nymphy kind of girl would spring along and go, oh, I'm wearing no knickers, of course. And then the no knickers logo would come up.
Did you have a fur coat on, though?
No, she was just poncing around in her knickers.
There used to be a shop that was basically used to sell knickers in Britain, or panties, or whatever the English word is now we could use, and it was known as C&A. And I'm actually not pursuing that. Carry on.
Okay, I'm going to stop this. Rachel.
Yes, please. Yes.
Did your mum ever tell you, like, go to school, I'm not going to be looking after you forever?
My mum, I was in a bit of a weird situation because I was an actress when I was a child. My mum said, go to work. and I won't be looking after you forever. Okay. And then when I stopped doing that and I went to school, she said, make sure you get an education in case the actress thing doesn't work out. And then after that, I just kind of did what I wanted to do when I turned 18, and she gave me a blessing.
Oh,
so I was never under any strict rules. With Beth, I say to her, pick something that you want to do, because she's in year 11, so she's got one more year of high school after this one, and then she wants to go to university. And I said, get good grades, study hard, work hard, and get into a field that you're going to enjoy, because there's nothing worse than doing a job that you don't like.
Excellent advice.
Good one, yeah. Lee, did you ever go to school?
I never went to school, really.
Can you write? Can you actually write?
He walked 5 miles in the snow to do maths on the side of the road with a piece of coal. And
I never saw the relevance. I never saw the relevance of school.
Well, it looks like it anyway.
It was a social thing for me. School was a social thing for me.
Well, I had a social life outside school, and I didn't really. I was very insular. I was like an only child.
I was like the uni bobber.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in Australia, but I know in England, like when you're 16, you can basically finish school and go to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's same here in Slovakia. You can do it, but nobody except our Roma friends, nobody does it, because without going to college, you actually nothing. You can't find job. You might as well go to job center and ask for money, which you won't get anyway because you haven't worked before.
Do you have to pay for your own education though? Do you have to, like in England now, we through our taxes, we pay a phenomenal amount for the education system in Britain. But what happens with students over here is that they have to take out a loan to pay for their own education, and they end up with a debt of £20,000-£30,000, which is the equivalent to a deposit on a house. That's what they start work with, completely in debt. Does that work?
They're starting to offer this here, like this, usually for university students. But it's not very common. People are in Slovakia still thinking, like, oh, I don't want to have debt. I don't want to have loan. They still like to only get what they can afford.
Well, this is government-enforced debt.
Yes, this is the same in Australia. It's called HEX. And what you do is you go to university. You don't have any outlay per se. But once you've finished your degree, they will the Australian Tax Office will garnish you.
Garnish?
Until that debt's, and
well, they eat you with the dogs.
No, they put a bit of parsley on your head. But they will take a portion, not a lot, not a significant amount, but they take a portion of your money to pay off your HEX uni debt, and then once it's paid, it's paid. And of course, if you come into some sort of lump sum, you can pay it off earlier.
What sort of debt do you have in Australia for that?
It depends on what you're doing. If you have a medical degree, you're in big trouble. If you do what I started doing, which was a Bachelor of Arts degree, you'll probably end up with a $10,000 debt, maybe.
Which is what, about 7,500 in English pounds?
Yeah, that's for 4 years, for 3 or 4 year degree.
Well, yeah, ours is £30,000 on average. No, probably that's 20,000.
A Bachelor of Arts isn't a degree. It's a ticket to the student union to buy beer for 4 years, basically.
But exactly.
If you do journalism, or if you do any of the sciences or any of engineering or any of that stuff, you're looking at a $30,000-$40,000 debt.
Why journalism? Why do young people go to college and to university to study the media?
Because when I finished high school in 1989, my first choice was journalism, and I got into journalism, but I deferred my course for a year because I went travelling. I wanted to write. I wanted to write important things. And then after taking a gap year, I realised I didn't want to write anything at all. So I never went. And I went later on and did a Bachelor of Arts. So, in creative writing of all things. Mm. So, it wasn't something that I wanted to pursue. But when I was 17, 18, I wanted to be a paper man.
Well, I see. You see, Petra asked whether I went to school. Well, I did go to school sometimes. I went. I suppose if you looked at the whole of my school career from 5 years old to 15, I went quite a lot in that 10 years.
That's but because you listened to your mummy and you had to.
Well, sometimes I actually, you know, I once actually phoned the school up and pretended to be my father and told the people that at the school that I was ill. And they knew it was me.
You're not supposed to do that till you're 15, you know. Do it after.
I was nine. I had like a little squeaky girl.
You little.
I wrote a fake note once saying that I had diarrhea and spelt diarrhea incorrectly.
I know. And I phoned up and I said, "Oh, it's Ken Banks here. I'm phoning up on behalf of Lee Banks. He's a bit poorly." And he said, "Lee, are you coming to school or not?"
You said not.
Yeah, I said, "No, it's not. It's Ken. It's not Lee. It's Ken." Like that. He said, "Lee, grow up." And then I had to go to school.
That's hilarious.
But what I'm saying is, I left school when I was 15 because I hated it, and there's lots of convoluted stories about why I left. And I went directly into a local newspaper, and that's why I don't understand why people... There is no demand for media degrees in the British media world. If you've got a media
degree...
Didn't
you need to have some sort of apprenticeship?
Yeah, you can get a cadetship. You can get a cadetship here in Australia, but I don't know if you can anymore. But there was a huge, back when I was wanting to be a paper man, there was a huge demand for kids to go into, and journalism was one of the most difficult courses to get into next to law.
Well, that's why I don't understand it, because in Britain, the newspaper you first work for, like Petra just said, it has an indenture period. And you're indentured to that newspaper for 3 years. And within the 3 years, the agreement that is made with the contract you've got with the newspaper is that they send you to college to learn how to be a newspaper man or woman. Mm-hmm. To newspaper practice, law, also local government. You learn all these things. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you've got a degree in the media has cut no water with this. I don't know if you do cut water, but it does nothing to cut anything with the media companies, because you've still got to be trained, and yet everybody goes on media courses and pay for the rest of their lives having a debt that they've got to keep paying off. That's incredible. To me, amazing. And again, it's one the other
and
ways.
Now you don't need to, because we've got the internet and you can blog and you can start your own everything, and you don't need to work for a paper anymore. You can just do what you like.
I'm sorry, I have to take issue.
Don't say that, because he'll lose a job.
Citizen journalism is the worst thing that's ever been perpetrated on the honesty and straightforwardness of this world. And citizen journalists have no right to call themselves journalists. And if there's any citizen journalists out there who wish to take me to task on this, I could argue till the cows come home about citizen journalists. They are not. They are bloggers. They are people who write. They are not journalists. I spent decades learning how to be a journalist. And you people who call yourselves citizen journalists suddenly set yourselves up and you have no idea of the law.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Journalism!
Oh, shut up, you. I think it's just about time to say goodbye to everybody, because Lee is getting just way out of the way.
Just going to see if these men have managed to get the car out of my drive yet.
No, come on. You just think about no pants, Mark. And
yes, no pants.
Okay, so say goodbye, Lee.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening to me. I love you all.
Goodbye, Rachel.
Goodbye, Rachel. You're a delight, Rachel. We love you.
I love you too. Goodbye.
From the heart of Europe to the world, Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones.